Welcome to Libertarians Working for You with host Arvind Vohra. Our program explains how to solve the most critical problems we face in America today: unemployment, debt, healthcare affordability, high taxes, loss of personal freedoms, loss of privacy, threats of war, and more. Now, here is your host, Arvind Vohra.
Welcome to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vohra, and today I want to ask you this question. Let's say you had a problem. Let's say you had an ant infestation in your kitchen. And let's say you got some ant poison to get rid of the ants. And after you put in a little bit of this poison, there were 10 times as many ants. So you say, let me put in a little bit more. Now there's 100 times as many ants. So let me put in even a little bit more. At some point, a rational person will say, let's stop using the solution that is exacerbating the disease. Let's stop using a cure, not a cure that's worse than disease, but let's stop using a cure that only makes the disease worse. That is something that every single individual human being on this earth understands, except for the people in government. The people in government have realized that, yeah, we have a bit of a problem. College tuitions are expensive. So their first solution, let's give a little bit of government funding. College tuition got more expensive. So they gave a little bit more, and it got even more expensive. And now they're trying to make the whole thing free, and there is nothing more expensive in the government than, quote, free. Because, quote, free just means they charge us as many taxes as they possibly want to. With me right now, we actually have somebody who can shed a first-person perspective on this. Anton Chamberlain is an economics major at Loyola University in New Orleans. He is also a member of College Libertarians at Loyola. And he's going to share with us a little bit about the on-the-ground perspective on what's going on in terms of college and government involvement. Anton, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Anton, let me ask you this. Has the government interference in college tuition, has that made things better or has it made things worse?
I think it's unequivocally made it worse. As you look at the cost of tuition, there are two main spikes, and the first one is when Lyndon B. Johnson instituted his Higher Education Act in 1965. And then the second one was when in the 80s when President Reagan instituted the Student Loan Consolidation and Technical Amendments Act of 1983. Both these were government interventions into the student loan, the college market, both of which it only expanded the amount of loans that the government was handing out. And as we've seen, college tuition has only risen since Lyndon B's first act in 1965.
Now, one of the things that we've seen just across the board, across the country, across the entire, every single state, every county, we're hearing about more and more people ending up with $50,000, $60,000, even $100,000 in college debt. We have people who are in their late 30s and 40s still paying off their college debt. Now, why is government not the solution to that problem?
The government's not the solution because they don't let the market figure out what needs to happen in regards to higher education. For one thing, all degrees are treated the same. You know, we hear this constant talking point, you know, if you go to college, you'll earn an extra $1 million throughout the course of your life. But that's on average, and it's very important that it's on average. It's not for every major. Every degree is not the same, yet they're all treated the same. So regardless of your major, you know, you'll get a loan, and you'll get the same interest rate whether you major in animal science or if you major in engineering, whereas one of the two majors has a higher default rate, but that doesn't matter. You get the loan. So you have people that are getting degrees and majors that aren't going to reap the benefits and allow them to pay off their debts, but whereas the market would charge them a higher interest rate, which would discourage certain majors to be taken on. And then you have this push because of the loans that governments are pushing out. All you've done is increase the demand for college, which will only increase the price. It's simple, you know, simple supply and demand. It's not very complex.
I want to go back to that first idea for a second, because For most people, you know, when you're 16, 17, 18, you've never taken out a business loan. the only loan you've ever considered is a college loan. Mm-hmm. So people don't understand this fact. If I want to open, you know, for example, my background is in education. I have a long track record of experience in education. And if I present some reasonable, workable business model to a bank, they would be more than happy to offer me a loan at a reasonable percentage. If, on the other hand, I say I want to teach trees how to read, they're probably going to say, well, that sounds unlikely to succeed, so your interest rate is going to be much higher because we think you might default on this insane loan.
Exactly. It's the same idea with the majors. You know, certain majors will give you a higher salary versus others, and certain majors you're more likely to default because you're not able to get a job once you graduate, so it only makes sense that those degrees should require a higher interest rate. It's kind of like Bernie Sanders' tweet that is just baffling. He was astounded that a loan with collateral had a lower interest rate than a loan that has no kind of collateral whatsoever. It's not a hard concept.
That was a really interesting tweet. And what he said was that it seems unbelievable that students are paying 6, 7, 8% on a college loan, but people can get a house loan, a mortgage loan, a loan to buy a house for 3%. And like you and like many people, when I saw that, I was baffled. I mean, you know, if a bank can sort of take a house, that's a collateral. I mean, that's a collateral that can repossess your house. It's not clear that they've ever repossessed somebody's brain or, you know, repossessed their degree. And that kind of flawed economics is really, in a lot of ways, what's gotten us in this location so far. The second thing you were talking about was demand. And that's a really interesting thing because you're going to have people saying, well, isn't it good that more people want to go to college? Explain to me, how is giving people money to go to college, how is that increasing demand in a problematic way, and how will stopping that help make demand more effective?
Well, as with any other subsidy, what all the subsidy does is the government, when giving any subsidy, they artificially increase the demand, which mm-hmm. will inherently increase the price. Anyone who looks at a supply and demand graph, you know, with price on the y-axis, quantity on the x-axis, could see that any increase in demand will cause the price to increase. But this increase has been done artificially. It's not because on the market there's a higher demand for people with college educations. It's artificial. The government has created it out of thin air. There isn't any more increase on the market. There's no more desire to have more people with college degrees. So we have this push for higher education no matter what. It's also become more suicidal in the sense that kids are being taught, no, you have to go to college. You have to do this. Mm-hmm. And they're ignoring things like trade schools, which mm-hmm. serve very important functions. And people are being pushed away that, and they're being pushed towards college where they'll get a four-year degree that may or may not give them the abilities to pay off their loans. It may or may not be worth it when we're an associate's degree or a course that they can take for 2 weeks. Very well might reap them greater benefits than going to college for 4 years. But we're being pushed away from those types of things. They're being pushed towards this debt-chained college education.
That's a really interesting point. And it's true, you know, we see it true in areas like, you know, in terms of things that teach you a practical skill that you can apply right away. But there's another area in which I think it's really interesting. And this is, you know, something where I studied math and economics. I went to Brown. I went to an Ivy League school, studied math and economics. And that kind of opened certain doors. But honestly, the only thing that really mattered is that I passed one actuarial exam. And the fact that I passed this one exam meant more than all the just stupid stuff I had to do in high school just to get into college, all the silly, just the ridiculous amount of money that I had to pay for college. It's one exam in the actual workplace. We're not just talking about more like technical skills and stuff like that. We're talking about, you know, the traditional high-end academic skills that people are about. And what you're saying is absolutely true. People aren't encouraged to look at other things. They're not encouraged to say, like, well, what else is there? It's like, you have to go to college no matter what. Go to college, otherwise you're just a morally defective, economically impossible, just deadbeat. Now, let me ask you this. What happens to all of that, let's say we just tomorrow shut down all the entire student loan program. No more government student loans, no more government grants, all of it gone. Then what happens?
Well, then you'd see, going back to the supply and demand graph we've alluded to, you'd see the demand drastically fall, and which would inherently cause the price to fall. And you'd see that all of a sudden, these colleges that are charging ridiculously high tuitions, they won't be able to get any students, because no student will be able to afford the tuitions without the loans, so they're going to have to either lower their price or go out of business. And right there, you'd solve the problem of the loan issue.
And so essentially what you're saying is, if we remove this crutch for colleges, and we say to colleges, listen, you guys have a lot of smart people there, you have a lot of resources, you don't need welfare. You need to figure out how to manage your business in just a reasonably sane way, because if you make your goods so expensive that no one can possibly buy it, well, then you're kind of like the person who's trying to sell like paper for $200 million a pound. It's you're acting like a fool, basically.
Exactly. And I think there's we also need to tackle this from the employment aspect, because things like skills tests, you know, for fear of being sued for discrimination and whatnot, businesses are shied away of offering these skill tests, which would be an alternative to college education. You know, there's nothing wrong with a person going online and researching something, you know, for 6 months, all day, every day. And if they can go to a job for whatever the job may be, and if they can pass an exam and showing that they know how to do whatever the job is offering, there's nothing that should be prohibiting that. If anything, you're alleviating the person from having to go to college and dropping thousands and thousands of dollars that they may or may not be able to pay it off.
That's a really interesting point. We need to take a break. Let's see if we can talk about that for a couple of minutes. But we need to take a break right now. Guys, right now we're talking with Anton Chamberlain. He's an economics major at Loyola University. He's on the ground. He's a member of College Libertarians. He is in the belly of the beast. And we're going to be back in just a couple minutes. Right now you're listening to Libertarians Working for You.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Ready to chat about your favorite soap operas? The Daytime Discussion is here with Dan J. Kroll and Soap Central Live. For the past 15 years, Dan has been dishing and discussing on SoapCentral.com. And now he's taking the talk to the airwaves of the Voice America Variety Channel. You'll go behind the scenes with the biggest stars of daytime, along with guest commentary from the Soap Central columnists. And we'll take your questions and comments during our live show. Soap Central Live, every Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
No matter what your current situation is, you have a unique story to your life. It's a dynamically changing story that requires constant adjustments to lifestyle and environment. That includes your home. As you continue to enhance your living space, you're also making overall improvements to increase the value of your home. Join Laura Minniff each Tuesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific Time, for dynamic insights for your home environment on the Voice America Variety Channel. And start living now.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com. This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvin Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. We've talked in many shows with many people about how government is driving up the cost of college by giving loans to anyone who asks for them, giving loans realistically to people who often haven't really considered all the different options, giving loans of equal interest rates to people regardless of the economic viability of their college plan. But there's another entire side of this that we're going to talk about right now. With me is Antone Chamberlain. He is an economics major at Loyola University and a member of College Libertarians. Antone, so what were you were alluding to at the end of the last segment about skills testing. Explain what that is, actually. Let's start with that.
Skills test, in essence, would just be, you know, say you want to get a job as a mechanic. The owner of the store gives some type of exam where you show whether you're competent enough to do the tasks that you would do upon being hired. And
makes
so what
sense.
This whole idea revolves around is it's another way that the demand for college has been artificially increased by government because being sued for discrimination or what have you, businesses have shied away from giving these types of exams upon application for hiring. And so basically colleges just turn into a $100,000 four-year skills test for many employers.
Interesting. So what you're saying is, let me make sure I have this right, what employers could do theoretically, and many may want to do, is just literally give incoming hires a test of skills.
I mean, we have proponents saying, you know, college needs to be free and all this stuff, but we already have free education. It's called the internet. So mm-hmm. I don't see why it should be not allowed to where someone can just study online everything they need to know about whatever this certain job might require. And say they do that for 6 months or, you know, if they're really on top of the game, maybe in 2 weeks they can know everything they need to know online for free.
Mm-hmm.
And then they can just go and take this exam. And if the business thinks that they've scored well enough and they're good enough to hire, that should be the end of it.
So that's really interesting. And, you know, as I was mentioning, in the financial sector, we have actuarial exams and things like that that are very similar to that. Of course, the big difference is the actuarial exams are just honestly, they're so difficult that many people just don't even consider taking them. But what you're saying is it doesn't have to be something that's so outlandishly difficult. It doesn't have to be something that takes 4 years and $100,000 or $200,000 to do. It can be just a standard simple test if employers weren't afraid. So what is the government doing right now to make those employers afraid?
Well, we have there are so many things that could cause businesses to be sued. You know, if you decide mm-hmm. to hire one person over the other, then the person not hired could sue for whatever reason they want for not being hired. We have the mm-hmm. Americans with Disabilities Act, which even if someone is an alcoholic, you can't fire them for being an alcoholic through the Americans with Disabilities mm-hmm. Act. You have these government infringements upon businesses. They're not allowed to engage in commerce, and they're not allowed to do anything without government interference into their company.
Fascinating. So realistically, if companies didn't have those fears, then they could just start, you know, essentially getting rid of those fears created by just short-sighted laws could allow companies to hire people without having them go to college. And that
exactly.
means that you'd have people with greater independence. You'd have people who are much more strongly motivated. I mean, realistically, I'd instantly hire a person that had the discipline to study something him or herself over someone that, you know, had to have it done through external requirement. I mean, that's an impressive thing by itself, and from my perspective. And
exactly.
we could essentially
we're just too fascinated with formal schooling. We equate formal schooling with education when they're not necessarily the same thing. And, you know, as Mark Twain once said, I believe, I never let my schooling interfere with my education. They're not synonymous. They're two different things. You can educate yourself, and it's different from your formal schooling.
I'm looking right now at this list that has so many people who did exactly what you're describing, where some decided that they didn't need formal schooling because they already had started making money with their businesses. You know, people like Ralph Lauren, who's already making a little bit of money selling ties and wanted to see where it could go. But what we have here that's really interesting is we also have some people that it wasn't that they couldn't afford college. It wasn't that they didn't want to get educated. It wasn't even that they had their own business. They just specifically actively avoided college. They said, this is ridiculous. I'm going to go to the library instead. And right over here at the top of this list, we have Ray Bradbury. That's interesting. The famous novelist, author of Martian Chronicles and Fahrenheit 451. He basically just said he was going to put his faith in libraries, not in college. And, you know, the history kind of speaks for itself over there. That is a very, very powerful message. This idea that says that, you know, we can do skills testing. We know what skills this job requires. One of those skills might be, don't be an alcoholic. One of those skills might be, you need to learn how to use this equipment. You know, one of the things that we're hearing more and more from employers, they're saying that a person who has a degree, you know at least that that person is willing to work and is realistically probably willing to do stuff that they don't really like doing that much but are just willing to put up with it, which is like, you know, a skill, I guess. But what they're saying is that they lack all of the actual technical skills, you know, that they need, whether those skills are like, you know, abstract and mathematical, or whether they're just practical with computers, or whether they involve the use of tools, that people just don't have those skills in the first place. So it's like you go to college for 10 years, for 4 years, you spend $100,000 or $200,000, and you don't even get the skills. That is the exact wrong way for us to be going about this. Now, so let's say we change this. Let's say we get rid of this. Let's say that we get rid of all the subsidies for college. What you're saying is, it's not just that college would become a lot cheaper. What you're saying is we could actually do the same thing literally for free.
Exactly. The problem also we have is, you know, the market is a phenomenal thing. And it allows the best ideas to prosper. And and when there's a monopoly, there's government control over the sector, the outcomes are horrendous, and you know we're seeing that right now with our public school systems. You know, if competition was allowed, if we were to try different types of modes of educating children, and whether it's children or whether it's high schoolers or whether it's for college, if different modes of doing things were allowed to compete, then the best way to educate our youth would rise to the top. But that's not allowed.
Interesting. I'm looking right now at this, you know, the complaint that people have, and here's the complaint. They say, like, if you learn stuff on your own, you're going to maybe get some perspectives, but you're not going to have, you know, a professor. You won't be able to study academic subjects. Maybe you might learn some technical skills, but you can't learn to think critically. You can't learn things like, you know, anthropology or biology or chemistry. Now, right now, I'm at the now legendary site, MIT's OpenCourseWare, where literally they have almost all of their, you know, every department has huge courses online. You got bioengineering here. We have anthropology. We have tons of courses in each of these areas. We have courses in math. And not just like a course in math. I mean, let me see if I honestly can't even count the number. There's just too many of them. The point is, to say the least, there's a lot of courses available.
Exactly. It's just an incredible educating tool. You know, going back to one of the things you said, no, you can't learn critical thinking. Tom Woods' Liberty Classroom has a course on critical thinking. And so there are things that are popping up. I'd much rather pay $100 a year for Tom Woods' Liberty Classroom or, you know, for the Ron Paul homeschool program than drop $200,000 on a university that may or may not teach me what I need to do or what I need to learn for my job.
And right over there, I think that's you know, one of those situations where we see that private sector charity and all these, or just the private sector, just for profit, you know, behaviors, whatever you want to say, are creating the very thing that government says that the private sector can't create. And that's what the government said. They're saying we need to have free education because the private sector will never create free education. And I understand. Yeah, I mean, I get why they would say that in the 1920s. I mean, I guess I could kind of see it then. Maybe. But to say it now is stupid. There's Khan Academy. There's Coursera. There's MIT Open Course. I mean, what exactly do they think is missing?
It's the same way that, we need the government in charge of the taxi cab service. Oh, but Uber's kind of doing what they said the market couldn't do.
Exactly. Now, this is just absolutely just just ridiculous that it's happening, but it's also, I think, a really exciting time. You know, I think even with these subsidies, more and more people are leaving the college system. You know, we have the famous Thiel scholarship started by Peter Thiel, who's basically saying, listen, I'm going to give you $100,000 to not go to college for 2 years.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so the fact that that's happening, I think, like, honestly, I think it's a matter of time before this thing goes away. And thanks to efforts from people like you working at the ground level and exposing these ideas to other people who are in college themselves, I think that's going to make a really huge difference. Anton, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Guys, we just finished talking with Anton Chamberlain. He is a member of College Libertarians at Loyola University. And you've heard it right from the ground. What the government is doing to, quote, help college students, it's hurting college students. I mean, you don't need to be a rocket scientist to say that if college only costs $3,000 a year, you would never have more than $12,000 of debt. But if it costs $200,000 a year, even if the government pays for half of it, you're still going to have $100,000 in debt. And so changing this is incumbent on all of us working together to get rid of these ridiculous restrictions on employers, getting rid of these bizarre welfare subsidies for colleges. And if you want to do that, if you want to make this happen, I don't mean ask for it to happen. I mean, if you want to make it happen by using political pressure, by not even using pressure, by getting elected and just changing regulations, then you need to get to lp.org/states. If we want to bring down the college system, you can do a lot if you win a city council race. You can do a lot if you run, even if you don't win, even if you run for Senate and put pressure on your opponents to force them to address this issue, which is that cutting college subsidies will lower the cost of college tuition. If you run and do that, you're going to make a difference. But no one can do that, make that difference for you. You need to make it yourself. And if you want to do that, you need to do what I'm going to do this year, what so many other libertarians are going to do, what members of the Libertarian National Committee are going to do. And that is, you need to run for office. So if you want to do that, get to lp.org/states and get involved in a libertarian campaign in your state. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. We just finished talking with Anton Chamberlain. We will be right back.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
If you hear a dog barking or an angel singing, then you know that you are listening to Waking Up in America. Heard every Wednesday at 3 Pacific Time, Valerie Kirkhard and all of her friends will bring you powerful and humorous discussions that raise thoughts and give you insight on how to live your life to its fullest potential. Adventure is always a must on Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkhard, every Wednesday at 3 Pacific.
In the spirit of Have Couch, Will Travel, Dr. Carol Lieberman creates a haven of sanity in an increasingly insane world. Each day we are bombarded with news of events that have never crossed our wildest nightmares. Society is spiraling out of control and everyone is reeling from it. But now there's an answer. The best way to keep sane in this insane world is to tune in to Dr. Carol's Couch on Voice America. Dr. Carol, a certified media psychiatrist, will broadcast live from her Beverly Hills office every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time. Call or log in and get help with whatever is sending you reeling whenever you need a soothing voice to calm and advise you. That's Dr. Carol's Couch every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time here on America's Voice, voiceamerica.com.
Are you a business innovator or are you just sitting on the sidelines? Tune in every week for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP. Host Bonnie D. Graham talks to a cross-section of the movers and shakers who are leading by example. They will share best practices and innovative ideas to keep you thinking and moving along with the best. Join us for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP, Wednesday mornings at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvin Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvin Vora. During the last weeks, Democrats and Republicans have been just making a laughingstock of themselves, each trying to trip over themselves to see who can be the most in favor of bigger government and dumber government. We have the following quote from Carly Fiorina, which I think is a true quote. The government is woefully behind the technology curve. Absolutely true. No question about it. I 100% agree. And then we have Trump saying the following. We're not talking about religion. We're talking about security. I will build a wall. It will be a great wall. If you want to talk about being behind the technology curve, if you want to talk about just not understanding the way that just immigration and security works in the modern era, if you want to prove to the world that you don't know what you're doing, then it certainly makes sense that the best way to do that is to use 3,000-year-old technology as your primary form of security. This bizarre idea that Trump has been supporting again and again has shown us one thing without any question, and that is this. Anti-establishment doesn't mean pro-freedom. Anti-establishment doesn't even mean smart. Anti-establishment doesn't mean that there's anything smarter or better coming from that direction. Now listen, like many of you, I am 100% sick and tired of government as usual. But that doesn't mean I want it to be even unusually more ridiculous. I don't want it to be unusually bigger. Immigration has become a very complex question at the center of the Republican, in the center of the Republican field. And it seems that no Republican wants to address the type of immigration that works. It seems like no Republican wants to actually look at how to make immigration better. Doesn't want to look at how to make things more effective. And I want to use a bit of an analogy. Let's say that China decided to hoard all of the world's oil. They said, we're going to keep all of the world's oil to ourselves. You better believe that Republicans and Democrats would be clawing over each other to speak out against that. If Japan says, listen, we have this system, we're going to keep all the world's metals for ourselves. We're not letting any steel or platinum or anything outside of this country. We're just going to keep all of it. We're going to buy it from the whole world, and we're going to keep it right here. The Democrats and Republicans would rightly probably try to fight against that and say, listen, maybe we can talk about this. This sounds like a really bad idea. Maybe we can use some kind of political pressure, diplomatic pressure, whatever it is. They would say, let's try to do something about this. But when other countries are offering their most valuable resources to us, we're saying, no, 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 you keep those resources. That to me is the same thing as saying, no, 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 you keep all the oil to yourselves. No, 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 you keep all the rare earth metals to yourselves. The most important skill in any kind of business, in any kind of development, in any kind of anything that involves economics is human capital. Those of you who have studied even a single semester of macroeconomics know that the two inputs that matter in any kind of production are capital and labor. And labor is not just defined as people, it's defined as by their skills. If you put somebody who has no idea what they're doing in a room next to a machine, the end result is going to be nothing. If you put somebody who's a mechanical genius and have him use the machine, not only will you have a good product, but realistically, after a couple of weeks, you'll probably also have a better machine. Right now, the United States is working to cap, to limit, to reduce the number of H-1 visas. Let me explain what that means. An H-1 visa is skilled labor. When we have skilled labor working in our factories or working in our offices, it makes us more productive. It's just like if you have better quality octane, if you have, you know, higher quality octane, your car maybe can run more effectively. In the same way, if you have more skilled labor, your business will run more effectively. By restricting that number, it is essentially the equivalent of restricting our importation of oil. Right now, OPEC restricts how much oil they send us because they recognize that oil is valuable. But here's a fact. If you put a lot of smart people together, you're going to either get a lot more out of the oil that we have or find some way to not need oil at all. If you take all the biologists and the researchers and the experts and materials, we might not need oil. Those are the resources that we want. Now, of course, the concern that people have is they say, well, man, that means I'm going to have to compete with smarter people. I'm going to have to compete with people that have a greater skill set. Isn't that going to make it harder for me to get a job? Well, not necessarily. If the CEO of your company is more intelligent or more capable, chances are there's going to be more opportunities because the company you work for is going to be able to do more things. If your immediate supervisor is more capable and more talented, then also there will be more opportunities. It's ridiculous to look at skilled foreign labor only as a direct competition to you. It is also the thing that opens doors. If somebody comes from another country and sets up some kind of an electronics plant, the simplest example, let's say that instead of staying in his native country, the founder of IKEA came over here, or the founder of Bose, who actually did come over here from another country. When they came over here, they created jobs. Why? Because they had good ideas. You know who has good ideas? Smart people. You know who has good ideas? Skilled labor. Do you know who has the ideas that will give you opportunity, that will make more jobs available to you? Exactly the people that both Republicans and Democrats are trying to keep out. If you want my view, the correct thing to do for H-1, make it unlimited. I mean, as a pure libertarian, I certainly believe that we should have open borders on everything. We should let anybody in who's not an immediate security threat. But realistically, you don't have to be a hardcore libertarian or a hardcore pro open borders libertarian to understand that it's beneficial to let in the most skilled labor. Keeping that out is cutting our own jobs. If that skilled labor goes to, let's use this example. Let's say you have somebody from China who in 5 years is going to invent some amazing gadget. Let's say something simple, like a better blender. That person is going to invent a blender that is better, it is cheaper, it's more effective than any blender out there, more effective than BlendTec or any of those other blenders. In 5 years, this person, he's in China right now, but in 5 years, he's going to invent a better blender. And let me ask you this question. Where do you want that person to be in 5 years? Do you want him to be in China so that his company employs people in China? So that his company basically puts all the American blender companies out of business because it's better and cheaper and faster and more effective? Do you want that person in China? Do you want that person in France so that this new French blender company puts all the American companies immediately out of business? So all the Americans who work for those blender companies immediately lose their jobs. Do you want that guy in Canada so that this new Canadian blender company comes in, knocks out all the American competitors, and takes their jobs? Or do you want that person who's going to invent that amazing blender in 5 years? Do you want that person here in America? So when that company puts all the other current companies out of business with their superior product, those who have experience in that industry will be the first people hired. That when that blender company has such high production that they're sold all over the world and it has to hire more and more people, where do you want that guy to be? You don't want that guy just in America. No, you want that guy next door to you. You want that guy living as close to you as possible so that you're the first person in line for that higher paying job interview with that new and successful company. Now, I don't think that it's impossible for refugees to later come up with some amazing idea. Certainly possible. And there are many other reasons to allow refugees into a country. But the most likely people to invent something like that are going to be skilled workers. They're going to be people with college educations or something better. They're going to be the people that can pass these skills tests that we were talking about in the last segment. They're going to be the best and brightest in their countries. They're going to be the people who are going to make your jobs for you or jobs for your kids. If you own your own business, those are the people who are going to work with you to make your business even better. They might supply you better computers, better lamps, better something. Now, I don't know about you, but I want that guy here. I certainly want him in America, and ideally, I want that guy to move in right across the street. But right now, that guy can't move across the street because Democrats and Republicans are saying, no, 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 China. No, 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 Germany. No, 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 England. You keep the best and brightest for yourselves. We don't want them here. We don't want the opportunities that you're going to create. Only the Libertarian Party is saying, please, bring us more jobs. Bring us more opportunities. Bring us a stronger economy with better products. Bring that here because there is no resource more valuable than human intelligence. Please bring it over here. But it's not going to happen all by itself. We need your help. And if you want to make that happen, you need to get right now to lp.org/states and see how you can get involved in a libertarian campaign in your state. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. We'll be right back.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
The schizophrenia community faces tough challenges every day. The community includes individuals living with schizophrenia, their partners, parents, children, siblings, friends, neighbors, co-workers, and also their providers of healthcare and social services. To hear Dr. Gordon Atherley introduce members of the schizophrenia community who are sharing their experiences, tune in to Schizophrenia Community Radio every week, Tuesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific, on the Voice America Variety Channel.
We hear it and read about it every day in the news.
Stock prices plunging, home prices receding, and unemployment growing.
How can you preserve and increase your wealth in this kind of economy? Tune in to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with host Jay Taylor. Jay will explain the decline of our monetary system and the economy and will give you winning investment ideas and the tools to protect and increase your wealth. Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor can be heard Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvind Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. Now, it's not just the Republicans that are making just fools of themselves with their bizarre policy programs. The Democrats are doing the same. In fact, they're maybe even worse in some ways. Let's talk about foreign policy first. Let's talk about what's happening over there. Hillary Clinton has pointed out that the rise of ISIS is largely because of the shortcomings of the previous regime in Iraq. But the question is, what country put them there? Did Iraq decide to have a ridiculous election and put somebody in there? Or was it the United States getting involved where it has no business, as usual? Let's talk about this. Now, some of you have the same fortune as me of living right next to Washington, D.C., but most of you don't. Most of you live in other states. If you live in California, do you want D.C. telling you what to do in Sacramento? If you live in New York, do you want D.C. coming to Albany and saying, here's how you need to run your state? If you live in any country, do you want D.C. telling you what to do? I mean, any state, do you want D.C. telling you what to do? I'm pretty sure the answer is no, and I know that in any other country, not a member of this country, but an entirely other country, the response is stronger and it is more oppositional. The response is always the same. We do not want a foreign government telling us what to do. You or I would not be happy if a larger country came in and told us what to do, and I don't think anybody else anywhere else is either. It is puzzling to me that despite the knowledge that almost any person at this point has, despite the fact that every single person who's really looked at the college situation, as we discussed in the first half, it boggles my mind that we have people like Martin O'Malley who are saying that it's problematic that they had to borrow so much to send his kids to college, but isn't realizing that the only reason you have to borrow so much is because it costs so much. I imagine that Martin O'Malley, much like many parents, provides many things for his kids. Food, clothing. But I doubt that he's ever taken out a loan to buy dinner. I doubt that he's ever taken out a loan to buy clothing. So why, Governor O'Malley, do you need to take out the loan? It's not because it's necessary, it's because it's expensive. And why is it expensive? It is because organizations like the Democrats and Republicans are doing everything they can to make it more expensive. We could make that less expensive today, and all it would require would be to shut down all government funding to colleges. Now, what do I mean by government funding? Just like we said in the first half, student loans should not be provided by the government at all. If student loans were gone, if there were no student loans of any kind, no government grants of any kind, that the only way to get a student loan is to go to a bank and say, I want to study this, and here's what I think it's going to help me make more money, and I'm going to be able, and here's why I think I'll be able to pay back this loan, then what would happen? Most people would say, well, let me actually see if there's a better idea. Let me see if I can learn this stuff on my own. Let me see if I can pass a skills test, whether a very difficult skills test like the actuarial exam or a much easier skills test for an easier job. Let me see if I can do that first. And what would the result be of that? College would find ways to cut their costs. It's not hard to cut your costs in education. Education is one of the easiest places to cut costs. Why? You have DVDs, so you don't need to pay lecturers as much. You have all kinds of external services so that you don't need to spend so much stuff reinventing the wheel at every college. In fact, we've seen huge organizations that have cut college costs to zero. You have companies like Coursera, MIT Cope, OpenCourseWare that we talked about in the first half. They've cut college to zero. Now, I know that Democrats and Republicans like to spend a lot of money for no good reason. But even Governor O'Malley wouldn't spend extra money if the cost was actually zero. And I mean a real zero, not borrowed from taxpayers or not stolen from taxpayers. I mean the actual cost of higher education driven down to nothing. Now, one of the other areas in which Democrats are truly just boggling my mind is their view on guns. It's not that hard to see that most of these guns, these mass shootings are happening in gun-free zones. It's almost obvious to see that there's some sort of a correlation between where the shootings are happening and whether or not other people have weapons. And yet the Democrats are tripping over themselves to say, listen, we are more and more in favor of having not just a gun-free school zone, let's have an entire gun-free city. We already have gun-free cities. And guess what they have a lot of? Gun violence. We've all heard the saying, in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. Well, if you're the only person with a gun in a gun-free city, you have a pretty powerful weapon. The answer is not what Democrats are saying, which is to find ways to further get in the way of people's right to self-defense. And honestly, it's not what the NRA is saying either, which is to just hold the line. I know a lot of good people in the NRA, a lot of good NRA members, and what they want, and what thus far the NRA itself has been kind of lax about doing, is not to just hold the line. We don't want to keep things at this same abysmal level. We don't want this level of restrictions, but no further. No, we want fewer restrictions. We want to eliminate existing restrictions. We want to get rid of these gun-free school zone laws. The job of the NRA, in my opinion, is to do what its people want. And I'm telling you this, having talked to hundreds of NRA supporters and NRA members, some lifelong members, they're all saying basically the same thing. They're not saying, let's keep it just like this. They're saying, roll it back. Get rid of these laws. Allow me to defend myself and allow me to defend my family. And I'll tell you this. This is not just big macho guys that we're talking about. Because honestly, if you're a big macho guy, you have less to fear than other people. Sometimes it's just people who are, sometimes it's people who are smaller. Sometimes it's women, sometimes people who are older. Sometimes it's one big macho guy who realized that he can't fight off 20 big macho guys. The right to defend yourself is the most basic assurance of safety for everybody. If we can all defend ourselves, we all get safer. Especially interesting in the Democratic rhetoric has been this bizarre fascination with Denmark, where taxes are just through the roof. What's especially interesting is Denmark isn't even that fascinated with Denmark. Denmark is going in the opposite direction. Current leader of Denmark has said that, yeah, we are too taxed. It's getting rid of creativity. It's getting rid of productivity. People are leaving, and who's leaving Denmark right now? Well, it's not the least productive people. It's the most productive people. It's that guy that's going to invent that blender in a few years. I say, yeah, let them leave, bring them over here, but let's attract them over here with lower taxes, with fewer just mindless regulations and licensing and silliness. Now, I don't know about you, but I've just gotten just exhausted trying to wait for Democrats and Republicans to cut any part of government, even the parts that they supposedly claim to want to cut. I don't think they're ever going to do it. That's why I joined the Libertarian Party and why I encourage you to join the Libertarian Party. And the first step of that, you need to register as a Libertarian. Scare the Democrats and Republicans a bit. Let's see those numbers, which are already at record heights. Let's break the current record with registrations, make it even higher. But if you really want to scare those guys into doing something, if you want to make them so nervous that they feel that they have no choice but to cut government, and then they actually cut government, then you need to get to lp.org/states and get involved in a libertarian campaign in your state. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Arvind Vora, signing off until next week on Libertarians Working for You.
Thank you for tuning in to Libertarians Working for You. Please join Arvind Vora again next Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We hope you have a great week.